Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I had always thought nuclear power was safe. But in the end, the plant wasn't safe, was it?
That was the voice of one of the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant workers who appears in the new Frontline documentary, Inside Japan's Nuclear Meltdown, which airs tonight on Channel 13. Joining us now is the writer, producer, and director of the film, Dan Edge. Dan, thank you for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. Thanks, Brian.
And, of course, it's been almost a year since the massive earthquake and tsunami hit Japan. It was March 11th, 2011. The media was all over the story at the time, but it's really fallen out of the news cycle. So remind us how close Japan was to devastating radiation exposure.
Well, that's really the untold story of that first week. We had rolling news that first week back in March 2011, but nobody really knew what was happening. Even the workers right there at the front line of the meltdowns didn't really know exactly what was happening. We now know that there were three meltdowns. That was something that was denied at the time, that the nuclear fuel came pretty close to melting all the way through all of its containment vessels, which would have created a much worse radiation disaster than actually happened.
In the film, you talk to some of the plant workers who were there in those days after the earthquake, and I want to play a clip of a man who was part of a special group of soldiers that was called in to try to inject water directly into the core of one of the reactors to try to prevent it from total meltdown.
Just as we were about to get out of the Jeep to connect the hose, it exploded. Lumps of concrete came ripping through the roof of the Jeep. Radioactive matter was leaking in through the bindings of our masks. Our dosimeter alarms were ringing constantly.
Again, a clip from Inside Japan's Nuclear Meltdown, which airs tonight on Channel 13, a Frontline documentary. So after this explosion, some of the workers in the film say that company managers were basically prepared to have the plant evacuated. You interviewed Prime Minister at the time, Naoto Kan, in the film. Explain the level of tension and what Kan did to make sure that the company did not completely abandon the plant.
These are really extraordinarily dramatic moments. Through the night of the 14th, 15th of March 2011, it's about 3 days after the tsunami hit, the Prime Minister is woken up 3 a.m. in the morning, and he's told that TEPCO plan to withdraw all their workers from the plant, a complete surrender. Now, TEPCO dispute this to this day, but the Prime Minister and all his aides are adamant in talking to Frontline that they were informed that night there would be total withdrawal. Now, what that would have meant, and the government and the government experts were frantically calculating what that would have meant, is you would have had three uncontained meltdowns. The nuclear fuel could well have melted all the way through all of its containment, and you'd be looking at a situation that the Japanese government was indeed considering the possibility of evacuating hundreds of miles from the plant. That would have meant Tokyo was evacuated. Japan would have ground to a complete halt.
And was there somebody or some group of people who were actually considering this a better option than fighting the fire the way they did?
We have to get back into the moment there, and what the workers at the plant were facing at that moment were radiation levels that appeared to be rising to the point that they would very soon be fatal. So workers appeared to be faced with the possibility of death. And I think calculations were being made at that point about whether, even if men did stay behind, what they would really be able to achieve. Now, that morning, very early in the morning, the Prime Minister went round to TEPCO headquarters in Tokyo. He spoke to TEPCO's executives. He spoke to the workers via video conference who were at the nuclear plant at that moment. And a collective decision was made that they would remain. Some of them would remain and keep fighting the meltdowns, and it's very fortunate thing for Japan and indeed for the world that they did.
I guess so. It is one of the most daunting moral decisions that anyone has to make, to order people into what is in effect, or at least potentially, a suicide mission, in order to protect potentially a much greater number of lives. How are the workers today? How much do you know?
There have been many, many workers. There are thousands of guys working at Fukushima Daiichi as we speak. One of the remarkable things, which probably isn't much commented on, is that no one has died from radiation exposure in this nuclear disaster. In that respect, it's been handled far, far better, say, than the Chernobyl nuclear accident in the 1980s. And yet, TEPCO, the power company that run the plant, have released figures showing that more than 100 of their workers have, over time, been exposed to levels of radiation which significantly increase their chances of developing cancer over the next few years. So really, the legacy is a time bomb for some of these workers, and only time will tell.
And you interviewed some of them. How do they feel about the risk that they were asked to take?
They were very sanguine about it. They're very matter-of-fact about it. I don't know whether it's something about people who've been through such an experience. I don't know whether it's something particular to Japan. But they were, in a way, not keen to speculate about what might happen in the future. They felt
understand.
They'd done their duty.
Uh-huh. I could understand a reluctance to speculate about whether you yourself will get cancer after you feel you've done your duty.
Yeah. I mean, they definitely felt they'd done their duty. The Prime Minister put it this way, that in a sense, this has changed the nature of Japan. Japan, since the Second World War, has never hasn't asked its people to die for their country. And really now, for the first time in 60, 70 years, the nation was asking people to be prepared to die for Japan.
On our comments page, somebody has just written, my mom, who's Japanese, is reading a lot of websites and blogs about the meltdown and says people are talking about losing their hair in chunks. She thinks the Japanese government is hiding the fact that people are getting serious radiation sickness. I don't know how much of what she reads online is true, writes this listener, but she is no longer eating food from Japan. Is this a meme that you're familiar with, and whether or not it's accurate?
I'm very familiar with this kind of speculation. I've spent the last 6-7 months covering this story. Spent a lot of time with people from the Fukushima area. I spent a lot of time near the plant myself, and our reporting certainly doesn't suggest that there are mass that there is any immediate illnesses coming from Fukushima at the moment. What's less certain, and what there seems to be no scientific consensus on, is the long-term effect of low levels of radiation exposure, be that from food or from the initial radiation emissions from the plant. And I'm certainly no expert. And again, that's certainly something that only time and rigorous scientific analysis will tell.
Dan Edge, he is writer, producer, and director of the film Inside Japan's Nuclear Meltdown, which airs tonight at 10, a Frontline documentary on Channel 13. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, we will wrap up the show with the follow-up on the call-in that we had last hour. We said we would follow up on one issue that somebody raised, and the one that we chose was the roots of the high school shootings in Ohio this week and in general. Stay with us.